Thank you for inviting me. I you're the first sangha I've heard about that's like doing brunches and games on Zoom. That's a whole new world that I can consider, and good for you. In these times, it's Sangha is so important. To come together in the Dharma as human beings, to consider what's true, to help support each other, wake up, be kind. So we'll just start with, in the midst of what can seem like a crazy world, we have an amazing good fortune to have found the Dharma and to be here practicing together. So I wanted to begin with a poem. She is Amanda Gorman, 22 years old, African-American, the first youth poet laureate of the United States. Poem is What Words Begin. The word race first arose in the English language in 1508. Of course, it appeared where all words are born. A poem. When a Scottish writer spoke of a long line of kings and the dancing deadly sin of envy. So what is a poem if not a beginning? An announcement that heralds itself. Moments of air molded like melted wax. I always thought language was akin to the body. Padlocked oh so delicately to a pulse. It tells you in the beginning was the word. This was before 1619, before Trayvon, before Till, before Malcolm and Martin and Michael went still. Before the echo that is breath's pilgrimage to the start of the sound. Before the inception of a new poem, when I am bent and gasping, stripped skinny, thatched thin, a wild note waiting to be sung. I am braced against beginnings I cannot name, my breath wheezing so hard as to stain the haze of night. My teeth are bared. My tongue a rare thing, flared and forked. I'm the damsel, the dragon, the dork, a furious flower. I dare you. Bury me wilting under your feet, for what is stepped on cannot be stepped over. So I'm still not sure if words are something the page pulls from me or the page pulls me from. All the same, I am parcel to a we that is enviously gibbous, glamorous. The letters clamor in the damp dip of the tongue. Think. If sorrow made slaves sing, bronze faces polished with light, might we write a hymn that fills the mouth tight with wind? Maybe we can dream of lettering a lyric loud enough to crack the lung. I want to speak a blackness that is something to celebrate and something to shovel. The soil from which all of us start, buried deep down within me, under the skin. Like a secret skeleton, the shell that keeps us standing, Let our verses grab the globe by the ear, like a black grandma tugging a toddler straight. Let us arrive on the backs of words that give air its meanings, so that the next time historians speak of race, a long line of kings, they'll see us. Our crescent smiles, naked and ancient, shining so bright they make others black with envy. We tell the kingdom we are deadly and dancing too. The heralds announce that our race has just arisen from the flower beds where our seeds have always been. We grin, recognizing our reign isn't words, but the world words begin. Great Hope, 22 years old, my goodness. So I wanted to bring forward a word that is very dear to me, an alive word, Mahayana's favorite word, bodhisattva. Bodhisattvas know the depths and the profundity of our radical interconnection with everything and everyone. Bodhisattvas, we know that our life is not our own, and that we are all literally breathing each other in and out. In Zazen is the embodiment of this knowing, of this vow, of this way of living. Dogen says, Zazen practice is a deep awareness that the existence of the self is not a personal possession. That just this very person, each one of us in our little boxes, in our little skin bags, in our little personalities, includes the whole world. And that this moment and each breath extends and includes all of time and space. No beginning, no end. Because what the deep part of a bodhisattva knows is emptiness. Not as some cold, abstract, distant something or other, but as no inherent self-existence. I love that we just chanted Heart Sutra and the hymn to the Prajnaparamita. This mystery of alive. How do we speak it? How do we act it? How do we live it? The Bodhisattva vow. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. There is no one out there to save. Whatever you think is out there is a projection. Things to fix, things to do. We'll just get all tangled up in all our ancient twisted karma if we think there's somebody out there that needs our saving. And we have to do something. We need to save and be saved in deep mutuality and interpenetration with the whole world. That's what bodhisattvas do, which is nothing, which is everything. Delusions are inexhaustible. I love the Bodhisattva vows. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Suzuki Roshi said, everything is perfect just as it is. Everything is perfect just as it is. Dogen says, the whole world is Buddha's body. How could there be something wrong? And Suzuki Roshi finished his phrase, everything is perfect just as it is. You are perfect just as you are, and you and the world could use a little improvement. Study, be intimate with habitual patterns, human delusion. What is it to be a human being? Come home to humanity and to our own humanness. How else are we going to know compassion? See how we human beings, because of the way we perceive, not because there's anything inherently wrong, we see in twos. We've got two eyes. Forms, feelings, sensation, impulses, consciousness. Things arise, move into feelings, likes, dislikes. We try to fit it into something familiar, and then we just keep the wheel of karma going over and over and over again. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end and be ended by them. Enter, sit down in this very heart, body, mind, with and for all beings. Otherwise, we're all going to run around in our heads with our likes and dislikes, and we're just going to keep creating the same old world. And we have a pretty good idea at this point what that looks like and how bad it could get. Sit down with and for all beings. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Life will keep bringing us exactly what we need, even when we think that's not it. Use whatever we're given to wake up. Bow. Thank you, Buddha. Thank you, Buddha. Doing a lot of bowing these days. I don't know about you guys. That's the gift of being alive in this time. Before, you could sort of glide along because it was good enough. Maybe you could, maybe you couldn't. But if you're paying attention these days, a lot of Dharma gates to enter, mind states to study, emotions, the world, ay, ay, ay. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them and to be entered by them. Let life touch you deeply. Let it break your heart open over and over again. There is suffering. There is a cause of suffering. There is an end to suffering. These are not words. They're words, but they're alive words. What is it? Let's keep waking up together and helping each other. Not just us on the screen who, I presume, mostly agree with each other, but with the whole world. Suffering. Buddha's way, the Bodhisattva path, is unsurpassable. It's beyond our comprehension, and we vow to do it anyway. Sit down, stand up. Sit down, stand up. Forever. Continuous practice. Zazen practice more and more seems to me to be a gift that deepens and expands our capacity to be with what's uncomfortable, to not turn away. Capacity to witness our own suffering and the suffering of others and to find appropriate response. And the arising of bodhicitta, an awakened heart. I always loved, it seemed to me that bodhicitta must be something really joyful. It's like, whoa, bodhicitta. It's a rising, awakening heart, and it is. But Trungpa also called it the genuine heart of sadness. I've been finding myself recently tearing up. Things move me really deeply. I've been saying to people, it really beats being angry, because I also know what anger has felt like in these times. But to be tenderized by it, to fall down on the earth, to be touched over and over. Doralee told me, you of course are studying the Bodhisattva precepts, some of you, and the Paramitas, which is wonderful to study, but to live it. Refuge to fly home to plunge into this very life just as it is. To come down here on the earth along with and for all beings. Racism, social injustice, COVID, meanness of our political times, the upcoming election, fear of violence. I joined you a month or so ago when Zenju Earthling was here. I wanted to read you something that she wrote soon after the explosions on the streets. Maybe you've heard it, but it's okay. I don't mind repeating things at all for myself or for you. I kind of figure I need to hear the same thing over and over 100,000,000,000 times because I forget and remember and fall down and get up. And it's okay. Soften your ears, open your body. Otherwise, you're going to think, oh, that's just another bird song. You're going to miss the moment. It's called Darkness is Asking to be Loved. By now, we have lost the tiny sense of peace we created for ourselves. Our composure is an idea long gone, reflected in the grinding of our teeth and locked jaws. If you are still holding up trying to meditate, I invite you to fall down. Fall down on the earth. Come down here and smell the sweat of terror on your skin, overpowering the scent of agarwood. Come down on all fours and greet the darkness that reeks of death, reaches out its desperate hand and asks to be loved as much as we love the light it gives. Come down here on this earth and breathe for those gasping for air. Hear each scream as a bell that never stops ringing. Bury your face in the mud of this intimate place, in this shared dis-ease and tragedy. If you have nothing to say, now is the time for the deeper silence honed that does not apologize or seeks something kind to say. And yet the deeper silence is not quiet. It whispers in the dark and wakes you from the nightmare. Come down here and be still on the earth. Let loose shame, rage, guilt, grief, pain, and make a river of it. Come down here. Catch the love poems hidden in the shouting. Watch the unfolding of the seasons from the ground. Look up at the sky. And when it hurts from being down here so long, roll over and see what you couldn't see from the other side. Breathe out loud. No particular posture needed. Fall down onto the earth. Fall off your soft cushions. Come down here. Come down here where the only lullaby tonight will be the sound of your heart drumming the songs you were born with. Intimacy. I love that word. It's one of the reasons I could stay with Zen. I didn't understand enlightenment or emptiness but intimacy. Like, what is that? Zenju says, acknowledging all the suffering and living as close as possible to that which hurts. If we let the intelligence of our bodies lead us, as we were led into this world at birth, we will remember the mother's milk of transcendent luminosity, the wisdom that comes from no one and is directed toward no one. Come down here into the fire. The whole world is burning. One of the Buddha's first sermons is the fire sermon. The whole world is burning. We're surprised. So I want to give you an image that has been making me happy in these times, of the blue lotus. Dogen said in his fascicle, Kuge, Flowers of Emptiness, the time and place that the blue lotus flowers open and spread are in the midst of fire and in the time of fire. The blue lotus blooming is a bodhisattva's heart awakening, opening, and it needs fire in order to flower and open. It is only under these very circumstances, not turning away, sitting with and for all beings, that our own Buddha nature opens and blossoms. So we renew our bodhisattva vow over and over and over. The appropriate response. And then we see what's needed. Creating a new world, not the same old world that goes round and round. The wheel of karma, the wheel of suffering. Bodhisattvas sit in the middle of it and listen deeply. Dogen further wrote, in Kuge, all sparks and flames exist at the place and at the time that the blue lotus flowers open and spread. Beyond the time and place of blue lotus flowers, not a single spark is born, and not a single spark has vivid life. Beginning with the smallest of sparks, each little intention, our bodhisattva life blossoms, becoming a fire that illuminates our understanding and the world, compassion, transformation, We just keep enacting our deepest desire to be perfect. That's what we do as Sangha members. That's what we do with the Dharma. We need each other so deeply to keep encouraging each other. At the place and time, right here, right now. No moment or action is disposable. We are the bodhisattvas, our hearts blossoming in the fire. So we choose over and over. Can we respond with equanimity and wisdom and skillful means and love? I don't know what that means, but I know that's what I want to know. That's what I want to wake up to. That's what I devote my life to. Not as something special, but to just become a true human being, along with everybody else in the whole world and the planet, good heavens. Dogen said, Buddhas in the past, present, and future abide in flames and turn the great Dharma wheel. Flames are the great practice place of all the Buddhas turning the Dharma wheel, right here in this world. You know the teaching about what a precious gift it is to have a human life? Well, this is it. So I wanted to share with you before I close and recommend, I don't know if you found this wonderful little book, The First Free Women, Poems of the Early Buddhist Nuns. It's a fairly new publication. They're poems of early nuns that lived in the time of the Buddha. So when they talk about the Buddha, they actually experienced the Buddha. There's one in here called The Blue Lotus. Just going to read you parts of it. I walked all the way down to the darkest parts of my own mind. And I stood in front of the blazing roar as countless lifetimes of fear and revenge threw themselves into the furnace. Burn with me, my sisters and brothers. And when you're ready, come up from that dark place where you've gone to be alone. The path leads directly through these vast worlds. The path leads directly through these vast worlds of fear and hate. We have all wounded and been wounded. We have all been made to feel weak. Yes, there is great strength in the darkness. Yes, the mind can be used as a knife or a chain. Yes, your whole world is burning itself to the ground. Ask the lizard, how long has this been going on? Ask the sunflower and her million seeds. The mind is more powerful than you can possibly imagine. And then ask yourself what you are really prepared to give up in order to be free. What are you really prepared to give up in order to be free? And one more, short. Find your true home on the path. Find the path right here, in the center of your own heart. If you keep searching in the past and searching in the future, you will search and search. But your searching will never end. Find the path right here. in the center of your own heart.
Usually, this is time to invite questions and conversation. And
I was hoping
unmute themselves as they want to speak. So
I was going to say, I don't know if you knew. I didn't know Suzuki Roshi used to, when he would greet people at the Zendo, he would say, "Good morning, Bodhisattvas. Good evening, Bodhisattvas. What should we talk about?" Yeah, Oscar.
Hi, Chris. Thank you very much for the heartfelt talk and your beautiful poetry. So I was struck by some repeated references to the human, to the heart. And I recall our first ancestor in China, referencing the teachings as pointing directly at the human heart, a transmission outside the scriptures. And I'm interested in this repeated, and I'm thinking of words like anxiety and anguish, which refer to the sense of the body, and particularly the heart. But I don't really hear that much in Zen teachings explicitly. And I don't know why that is. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that. Although Zen is certainly a body-centered practice in that we put a lot of emphasis on forms relating to physical postures and so forth. What does Zen say about the sense of self as being in a body, having a heart, having what a body has, and the sense of that as giving form to the sense of as being, as being the form of our life. It's a rather rambling question, I know.
It's a good question. I think what you said at the end, the form of our life, which is this particular body, this particular karma, is sit it down. This is a body practice. That's why I trust it. It's not, I mean, you study, there's sutras, they're beautiful. Usually you do that, often you do that someplace down the road. Just sit down. Sit this very body down in Buddha's body, which is same, different. Sit down. Train this body mind by just stopping. And the beauty of the forms that help us all remember that we are separate. We sit on we're each on our own little cushion. Take responsibility for this life. Nobody else can get you to the Zendo. Nobody else got you here tonight. And you did get each other here tonight. And when we sit down, the whole world does sit down with us. That's the beauty of these teachings. When you go deeper and deeper and deeper, it's completely independent and completely interdependent. When your heart opens, as I understand it, the heart of the whole world opens. Does that answer or help at all?
Yes, it's wonderful. Thank you very much.
It's Linda here.
Yeah. Hi, Linda. You got muted again.
Okay. I just had such a visceral sensation of feeling the nuns from over 2,500 years ago when you read those poems and how they could have been written today.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. I knew the book was coming. I hadn't realized it was out. But gosh, thank you for tonight. And can you share where you found the words from our Dharma sister who spoke last month?
Oh, Zenju in Lion's Roar. It was published in the Lion's Roar.
Lion's Roar. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I think what you said and Oscar's question of that we can feel the nuns across time and space in our bodies and in our hearts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how can that be? And it's true. There's so much more. Time and space is linear, and is profoundly not linear. I read, or someone told me recently, and it makes sense, you know, when someone says something and you go, oh, is that the wheel of karma, greed, hate, and delusion, it is linear. And that's what we believe, is this happened and that happened and that, and there is cause and effect. But the Dharma world is completely of the linear world, is when you do something good, good things happen, but it's also timeless, which is why our practice is so important for ourselves and each other. And again, I don't know about you guys, but I feel so motivated in this time because I care, and so do you. You know, do what you can, be in the streets, make donations, write letters, and sit down.
Keeping the two truths, to, you know, not separating them, but being in that pivot point that Reb Anderson always talks about is the work that's so hard to do.
And the joy of it, because otherwise, what else are we doing here?
And one last thing, when there's been so many references recently about the fire, and every time I hear that, I think of Baldwin and the fire next time, and recently reading some of his work. Reading how much Dharma was in it, I really wonder how much he knew about Eastern religion, but had a very, there was just a bunch of Dharma in there. All right, enough.
Well, I don't know James Baldwin's background, but I also think it's so great that we don't have any special license on the truth because we think we're Buddhists, you know? It's like if you're paying attention, good heavens, Buddha didn't set out to do Buddhism or create this thing. It got codified later. And the teaching of is that if you don't bring it alive through your own life, Buddhism is just a dead word. So yeah, I love it that every tradition points at the same thing if you look deep enough, if you feel the heart of it. Yeah, Dora Lee.
Well, I've been more aware lately of sort of watching with all the turmoil that's going on, and you know, everywhere we turn, environmental racism, the election, all of it. You know, there's a way in which I partly want to get away from it. Like I don't look at the news all the time, or I'm noticing that pull. But at the same time, I can feel that pull away is also a kind of deadening at the same time. So it's sort of surprising to me that turning back and getting into the fire again actually is where the aliveness lives and where I can feel the deepening of my interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. And it's just startling to experience this.
I had the thought as you were talking about some place to rest and refuge. You know, and all of our ideas about going forward, going back, going away, but just taking refuge is there is a felt sense to it. And it's.
I didn't know about the Blue Lotus, so that's a gift. That's.
Yeah. Someplace to rest.
That's the rest.
Right in the middle of it. Because otherwise, we're going to get exhausted. We're going to get angry. We're going to get resentful. You know, the whole play of it. Zazen is a way of living. It's a way of living that our body, back to the body again, Dharma body. It is a felt sense and it's palpable and we cultivate it and we come home to it to remember over and over and wake up. So many things to learn in this time, always, but this time is Dharma field. Yes, Steve.
One of the things that's come up for me, and it certainly came up tonight as you were talking about not being this and yet being that. That we talked so much about all of the things that are coming up now for everyone. And underneath all of that, for me, is this attack on truth. Mm-hmm. And it's hard enough to just be with that essence in good times. And know what you know in your heart from sitting and from being still. But that attack on truth just seems to have been elevated so much. And it's so difficult to know the truth and then to communicate with others that are pointing in the opposite. You're looking this way and they're pointing that way.
Yeah.
It's.
Now we know what's happened across time and how words have been manipulated and people have been manipulated. I never really understood before. And we also understand the precepts, the predominance of the precepts is about right speech. How do you say a true word? What is a true word? What is the truth? Is that good enough?
Rainey would like to speak, I think.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure Steve was that because I sort of jumped in there.
I didn't have any particular place for that to go. It was just coming up for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I share your grief and sorrow. Yeah. Rainey.
Thank you for the really both moving and it felt like a very visual talk. Like I felt like a lot was coming up. One of the things that was coming up for me was some, I think it was from the poem you were reading at the end that was talking about, what are you willing to give up for this? And then you repeated it. And it was like so striking for me. And I would be curious just to hear like what that phrase means for you. And I would also, I guess I have this question around, by the time you get far enough in your path that you are giving things up and sacrificing things, does it feel like a sacrifice or like a relief?
All of the above, and any illusion that somebody's so far down the path is, we're all practicing together. That phrase helps me, at least in two different ways. Is one, it's a mirror for me to see how attached I am. I want love and I want a peaceful world, but you know what? I have my own views and opinions and how hard this stuff doesn't go away. You just get more awake and more aware. It just makes you sadder, actually. and more the feeling of, oh my goodness. Oh, I know I've been practicing for a long time and how deep my intention in my heart is. And I get to watch, my goodness, I watch the news. Woo. And then you watch it and you watch it escalate out. And you realize how human beings do what they do to each other and what we do in our own hearts and minds. That's why, you know, when Trungpa said bodhicitta is the genuine heart of sadness, is you stay really close to compassion and forgiveness and, oh my goodness, oh, please Buddha. And then you come back to the Zendo and you sit down and over and over and over again forever, just because in the end, you care and you don't know, it's, you don't know what else to do. And this seems to be to find the path, to have your feet on the path and to keep waking up. We're completely in it together, Rainey. That help or not? Yeah. Yeah. Looks like we're coming to the end, but maybe if there was one more person, or we can just, well, there is no end, but you can all stand up and. Do you do the Bodhisattva vows at the end?
Yes, we do.
Is that part of what you do?
Yes. This, you want to lead that, may our intentions.
Yeah. Rainey, that's something else I do is I say Bodhisattva vows all the time. And I also say a lot, Norman Fisher, I think in his, maybe it's in Training and Compassion, and where he does the Lojong sayings and he sort of rephrases, many of them. The one that I most remember and I most love is, appreciate your lunacy and pray for help. I pray for help all the time. Because if you think you don't need help and we don't need help, you're not paying attention. So Yeah. Is that enough? Yeah.